and welcome to the Government Technology Insider podcast. Today we have an incredibly timely and important show. Joining us are three experts who are going to elaborate on the unique communications challenges that the government is facing during the ongoing coronavirus pandemic. We're also going to talk about how COVID-19 could create real problems for governments and agencies should they have to respond to other emergency situations during the pandemic. Now, if you're a returning listener to the Government Technology Insider podcast, you might not recognize my voice. So let me introduce myself real quick. My name is Ryan Traden. I'm a contributor to the Government Technology Insider, where I cover satellite, cyber, and digital transformation. I'm also the executive editor of the Government Satellite Report, one of the leading publications covering the ways in which the government is utilizing satellite resources and facing new threats in the space domain. Joining me for this discussion are three very exciting guests with incredible public sector qualifications. They are John Harris of Verizon, Kale Teeter-Gregg of GoTenna, and G. Ramos Carr of FES Government Solutions. Gentlemen, how are you all holding up? Is everyone staying at home as per social distancing guidelines and best practices?
Hey, Ryan, it's John of Verizon, and yes, we are adhering to all guidelines and doing everything we can to stay home and stay safe, and doing very well. Thank you so much for having us on the podcast today, and excited to have the conversation. Thank you again.
Hey, Ryan, this is Kale from GoTenna, and yes, we at GoTenna are also upholding all of the stay-at-home rules and social distancing, so we're excited to be able to chat with you today and have conversations that are outside of our home.
This is G. Ramos from SES Government Solutions, and we here are also working from home 100% for, you know, personnel that are able to. All the staff that have to man the teleports and the knocks are adhering to social distancing while still completing their jobs on site. But it's been a dramatic change from the norm for us, but we are surviving.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. And I'm especially glad that you're all able to dial in and join the discussion today. And yes, listeners, we are recording this over the phone because we're all doing what we can to flatten the curve, like good citizens. And that's a good segue, because the coronavirus has been incredibly impactful to our world. It's changed how we work. It's changed how we live, what we can do, how we teach our kids, whether we can walk our dogs without masks. And it's rapidly jumping the shark for pretty much everyone in this country, and I would assume around the world. But has it changed our communications needs, John?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I think what it's really done for us at Verizon is highlighted the importance of the network and the importance of connectivity as people are now, you know, working in very different environments than they did previously. So as we all just highlighted, we're all in different places than we would normally be and all have very different communication needs. As do all of our customers and all of our government agencies that are helping to respond to this pandemic. I thought it'd be interesting to give you some of the statistics that Verizon has seen as to how this pandemic has changed the needs of communication. So, for example, we're seeing, over a baseline period, about a 9 or 10% increase in total wireless data consumption. But interestingly, at the same time, almost a 35% decrease in the number of times those mobile devices are handing off from one cell tower to another. So obviously a lot of people using more data, but doing so in a very sort of stable way. They're not moving. They're staying at home and connecting from the same spot. Also, interestingly, you know, as people are now connecting to web conferences versus live meetings, et cetera, we're seeing increases in call times. So just the number of minutes that people are staying on the phone has increased by almost 45%. So, you know, a very different sort of pattern and flow of how we're seeing traffic on the network. And text messages, as you can imagine, are really, really high. We're up about 9 billion per day over the norm. So, you know, some pretty dramatic changes to the way people are consuming the network and how we're responding to, you know, to this pandemic. So what we're also seeing is, you know, the typical kind of response, if you will, for an emergency scenario is a lot of times centered in particular geographic areas. And it's been really interesting to watch with this response. Those needs are everywhere. There is no one pocket where this is hitting harder than another. Certainly cities that have got, you know, higher cases than others. But everyone is participating and everyone is needing to use the network in very different ways. And so it's been great to be a part of that. It's been great to help provide those services and mission critical needs as governments and citizens are responding and be able to be a part of the solution. So some pretty interesting, you know, ways that the network is being leveraged and our customers are ultimately taking advantage of it to support their citizens and their communities.
That makes sense. I'm sure all of our listeners have their own stories of how they've been relying more on digital services over the past couple of months with everyone staying at home. You know, one of the best ways to find holes in a hose is to turn on the water. And, you know, like what I mean by that is, like, when you put a system under strain, it's the best way to find its weakness. I'll open this up to all three of you. Have there been any unexpected weaknesses in our communications infrastructure that have been exposed by the...
Yeah, Ryan, it's John again. I'll jump in quickly and then I'll let my peers give their thoughts as well. The thing that's been interesting, I think, for us to see and what many of our customers were maybe caught them a little bit off guard was not necessarily the performance of the network itself, but the access to the end devices that customers ultimately needed to connect to the network. So hardware and customer provided type equipment that was needed. And it was an interesting way that this pandemic, you know, happened. Obviously, starting in China, it impacted a number of supply lines and production models. And as it expanded across the, the globe, and obviously here in the United States, we saw increasing demand for some of those peripheral pieces of equipment. And because so much of the supply chain in our country is built on a just-in-time sort of model, it did create an interesting supply and demand challenge for us for a little bit of time on how we could provide enough equipment to enough customers, particularly public safety and government customers, to ensure that they could care for their dynamically changing needs in each one of the environments. So we've made some obviously key learnings in that that time period and been able to adjust. And certainly I think our customers will do the same. But that has been an interesting challenge that we wouldn't have typically seen was access to hardware and equipment. And as we've gone forward, obviously look to find ways to mitigate that as we get into future situations or future responses. So,
yeah, this is Cale. I think one of our biggest challenges that we've faced is because we're a off-grid type of solution and we work in environments that are typically not supported by large networks, taking our end users and supporting our end users has been a challenge at doing this through networks versus being able to do this in person. So I think one of the immediate challenges that we have faced is, you know, ensuring that, as John was talking about, ensuring that we had all the equipment available to us, which was in shortage, you know, as we tried to set up our home offices and prepare to do these different types of trainings and customer support. Without, you know, having that office environment. And that has been a significant challenge that we gratefully overcame early on. But as John said, shortages and equipment and stuff, I think that was something that we were not prepared for.
This is G from SES Government Solutions. I think that we've seen different utilizations of networks that we're providing. So where communications and terminals were originally purposed or, you know, bought for a resilient communications strategy, we're seeing that users and customers are sending more traffic via diverse routes and using our communication platforms for when they start hitting max congestion on their network rather than when they don't have the network.
John said something really interesting before. He was saying that, you know, normally the distribution of demand for communications and digital services is pretty, centralized to certain population centers. And right now, it's kind of universal, blanketed across the country because everyone is online. You know, what are some of the options that communications providers can access when literally everyone comes online at once?
Yeah, right. It's John again at Verizon. I would say, you know, it's interesting when we think about the mobile environment, there are a number of different ways a customer can connect. So certainly, you know, different platforms in terms of a conferencing service and being, you know, able to kind of diversify and not have every person using the same type of connection. We're not running out of ports or having, you know, capacity concerns, but even just simple things, you know, on your device. Sometimes if folks are having challenges connecting, you know, sending a text message or using an application-based service to send messages, there are a number of different ways that the mobile devices, you know, anymore can connect us to critical information or to friends and family. The other thing that I think is important to remember is in moments like this for our public safety and first responder customers, one of the things that Verizon takes a tremendous amount of pride in is our ongoing support for this community. And so when we do have situations that there is a high demand for network services, being able to provide priority access to our mobile network or even preemptive services to allow first responders to make sure that those critical communications can get through. We partner aggressively with DHS and the CISA office to ensure that wireless priority services are available in times of need so that first responders can get through. But the diversity and the number of different ways that people can connect, I think, is important. And too often we get lulled into sleep of using the same mechanism over and over again. I think this has been a good reminder of ensuring we have a backup plan and a secondary plan for communication. Again, whether that's just a different application or a different service, a different type of provider for what we're typically doing day over day. So it's been a good learning.
Decal, is there anything you'd like to add to that?
Yeah, I think one of the things that we've found that has been helpful in places like New York or some of the initial programs that we created around creating some decentralized communication systems. And I know we have valued partners on right now. So I'm just talking more about, you know, when we have an emergency or disaster that we will have to respond to or that we are responding to during this COVID crisis, that we do have those alternative communication solutions that are available to our first responders that will keep them connected, maybe not at the same level that they're used to with a Verizon type solution, but still keep them connected. And we're still not having to create a lot of extra equipment that agencies are having to order in, because they're still using those same smart devices and so on, so that they can keep their connectivity during an emergency response.
And this is G from SES Government Solutions. I would say that the biggest deal we've had with customers is them not having terminals and being able to readily utilize our systems or platforms that we already have built and just scaling it up for more usage. And that would be the incentive that I would push that certain commands have wanted to see, is, you know, that they have that initial terminal and connection, and all they're looking for is maybe scaling up from like a T1 or a megabit or 2 megabits to 10 or 20 or 30 has been the biggest issue.
Yeah, some of the things that we've seen during this pandemic has been a big movement towards telehealth. It's a good way for people to still get medical services while social distancing. Also, it's a good way to increase access to care, especially for people in like rural areas. Helps medical professionals do more, you know, pack in more visits in their time, which is certainly important right now. So we've seen a big movement towards telehealth and telemedicine, oftentimes over video. We've seen a big movement towards video teleconferencing and other video-driven communications. You know, gee, what role is satellite playing in enabling that?
Yes, so on the satellite side, we have a whole different constellation that our traditional geosynchronous satellites can definitely support telemedicine, telehealth, and distribution of stuff like content about how to social distance. And we've seen USAID and others around the world who are interested in putting up additional channels in neighborhoods where they're used to using satellite communications as their inbound provider for content. But we also have a whole different constellation, our MEO constellation of O3B, that provides low latency, a very fiber-like, like intercontinental fiber capability that is going out to space and back with less than 150 milliseconds of delay. And we actually provided this demo to the USNS Mercy and Comfort prior to the COVID response, and they had seen and demonstrated and challenged the crew and their partners on the medical side to actually use that technology to see what benefits and what uses they could use it for telemedicine and bringing experts that are maybe located somewhere else into either an operating room or a consult for a patient.
A lot of the stories that we've been seeing around the coronavirus have been kind of centered around stories of compassion and perseverance from the people on the front lines. A lot of those people are, you know, our first responders and our emergency responders. You know, Kale, what's mesh networking doing help support some of those people?
Well, mesh networking solutions provide, you know, cost-effective communications alternative that can be easily and rapidly deployed. I think the rapidly deployed and easily deployed is the biggest thing, because as we become a partner with our agencies, we help when there isn't that centralized or there's that overburdened system that's in place. If you think about mobile and field hospital communications, the GoTenna Pro, again, will pair up with smart devices that the end users already have on their person. And then we can provide this little small mobile network that isn't going to stress the current network, and it's not going to require any additional infrastructure. When we're dealing with disaster-prone communities that have to respond during the COVID-19, we ensure that their connectivity is going to be up. If you're talking about some place like Tennessee or Alabama where we lost some tower sites, we were still able to get our first responders up during this event and still maintain that interoperability and connectivity that they might not have during an overburdened type situation that we have right now with our networks. Same thing down on the border, where we're having a lot of stress put on our RF infrastructure and where it's not readily available. We're creating this extended network and reaching out to that last mile of end users and our first responders on the scene.
Excellent. Well, you've been listening to the Government Technology Insider podcast. John, Kale, G, I'd like to thank all of you for taking the time to speak to us from the confines of your coronavirus shelters. It's been a pleasure speaking to all three of you, and I hope you will join us again for future episodes.
Thanks, Ryan. Appreciate the opportunity to speak with you and share some thoughts on how we can best support, you know, users and customers and the country as a whole.
Thank you very much for taking the time to listen to this podcast, as well as for you to put this podcast on. We know that it's beneficial to the agencies that we all serve, especially during this critical time.
Ryan, thank you very much. Appreciate the opportunity, and thanks for having us. Stay safe, and hopefully you're doing well in your shelter as well.
And I'm doing well enough as could be expected during a global pandemic. Thank you for asking, John. I would like to thank you, our listeners, as well, for joining us for this podcast and conversation. If you liked what you heard here today, I'd encourage you to check out Government Technology Insider and the Government Satellite Report for even more content like this.